You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Mickey Cows.
Hey, Bob. How are you? You sound
I'm
better.
I'm fine. It's been a while since you've graced this podcast with your presence, Mickey. And you know what I'm wondering?
Yeah.
Is the Google YouTube algorithm so powerful that it can reach out and find the many people who used to tune in regularly just to see you, but who may be off watching other videos right now? Like, is it going to like, are they seeing a flashing red light right now or something?
I think only Palantir is powerful enough to do that, I think.
Well, fortunately, Peter Thiel.
I'm sure they could do it.
But, you know how we'll find out? You know how we can find out? Is if I say, if you're happy to see Mickey Cows, smash the like button. And then if there's fewer than like 1,000 likes, I think they didn't find nearly all the Mickey Cows.
I think we had 1,000 viewers at our peak.
No. We used to do way, man. We were in the stratosphere, and then you left me, and it all came tumbling down.
Hey, hold.
But I digress, and I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Hey, no judgment. No judgment. We got to do what's best.
I was distressed.
What?
I was distressed when Paul Bloom, is it Paul? Is that his name?
Paul is his name.
Mr.
Oh,
Bloom.
Don't pull that kind of power move on him like you can't remember his name. That's petty.
I have no
branding. Are you that insecure?
Bob, I could barely remember my phone number at the moment. I have some kind of sinus trouble that's destroying my memory.
Masterful expectations lowering there, Mickey. And Bloom's by the way, recently had cancer and throat surgery. So everyone's expectations are low. I'm still recovering from the surgery.
You win for now, but you're on the mend, and I'm still plummeting into the depths. So
let's don't get competitive about this, Mickey. So we're going to get to the bottom of the Jeffrey Epstein thing, right?
Well,
We are. That's our promise.
I noticed you have a new neighbor on Martha's Vineyard.
Okay, who is that? I'm not, Leslie that's Wexman. Not where I am, but anyway, who is that? If I were, who is that? Who would that be?
Leslie Wexner.
Really?
Yeah, he just bought a house owned by Norman Foster, the famous architect, for like $37 million.
I'm going to drop by
Wexner and ask to borrow something.
So for people who don't,
ask if you can have his full power of attorney.
Just in case there's somebody watching who doesn't spend much time in the Jeffrey Epstein rabbit hole, Leslie Wexner, who either does or did own Victoria's Secret and various other things, super rich guy, is pretty central to the Jeffrey Epstein story. I would say, one of the mysteries is where did Epstein get his money? And the one person who we know gave him significant quantities of money and also power, like literally power of attorney, for reasons that seem mysterious, the one person who stands out in that category is Leslie Wexner, right? Like, it's
right.
He's also the
major possibility of the idea that Israel was funding this entire operation. He's the only guy who gave him enough money to support his lifestyle. The issue of whether, this is one of the points I wanted to make, it's sort of obvious, the issue of whether he is working for Israel is completely separate from the issue of whether Israel was financing him. How he made his money is different than did he make his money somewhere else and freelance on the side as a spy and give some information to various people, mainly to Israel. Wexner is the only guy rich enough to actually also supply the money. So, that if you're looking for, I watched that that Daryl Cooper podcast, which
I listened to that.
It's really good until he veers off in the end. Talks about John Podesta's Tony Podesta's art collection.
That's kind of an interesting insight into his. Anyway, that's a Tucker Carlson, Daryl Cooper. Daryl Cooper, also known as Martyr, made controversial for other reasons, but he knows his Epstein, I'll say that.
Right. His pro-Israel bias only surfaced once when he said, since we haven't had free speech since Israel, I don't know. He seems to forget who started the Gaza war.
You said his pro-Israel bias, which was either.
Anti-Israel bias.
I thought maybe it was ironic, but yeah, he's not. He's not super pro-Israel.
He kept it in check.
One reason he comes in for a lot of shit. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. He did a very good job explaining Epstein's past, and a couple of the lessons are. He's surrounded by way more rich Jews than just Leslie Wexner. Bronfman is there.
That's better coming from you than from me, Mickey.
And Leon Black.
Now, Bronfman, the liquor magnate, Bronfman?
Apparently, he's only one of the heirs of the liquor fortune.
Okay.
Of the secret.
But both Wexner and Bronfman, very pro-Israel. Also Leon Black, another close Epstein connection, right?
Right. And Wexner set up this fund, a philanthropy fund, to give his philanthropic money and put Epstein in charge. So Epstein hobnobs with these guys all the time, figuring out which charities to give millions of dollars to. And so he was part of this whole network of embedded in a network of wealthy Zionists, let's put it that way, and more so than I had realized. Vicky Ward had said that, but Cooper sort of gave details. So that's the first
Vicky Ward, the journalist who wrote an early piece for Vanity Fair. Yeah. By the way, let me be clear. So you're saying. Even if Israel wasn't giving Epstein money, it still could have been the case that he was doing things for Israel and money was coming from pro-Israel people. Okay.
The straw man, it's not a straw man because a lot of MAGA people believe it. The straw man is that he was an agent of Mossad with a Mossad card in his wallet, you know, collecting Social Security from Mossad. I mean, that he was an employee of Mossad. That is highly implausible. What is very plausible is he's a freelance operator. He's got this thing going where he has this, sex, he has
ring.
Sex events. It's a ring, I guess, but a ring may be exaggerating it, but he has this operation going where he can blackmail people and he can get information and he can give it to whoever he wants. He happens to be very pro-Israel. Not only was he dispensing money to pro-Israel organizations. There's a quote in a piece where his two great causes. One was science, and the other was Israel. And when he was convicted of the charge in Florida, he actually went to Israel, and before he was sentenced, threatened not to come back. Implicitly, Cooper says. So, I mean, it's impossible to argue that the guy didn't have an affinity for Israel. He's the one takeaway was he's surrounded by sort of pro-Israel forces all his life. And, you know, my line is, you know, if these people are all, pro-Uzbekistan, and he was surrounded by Uzbekistani lobbyists, we would wonder whether he was doing favors for Uzbekistan. Almost any other country other than Israel, it would be like a no-brainer to worry about that, right? There's that. The second takeaway from Cooper is he's been blackmailing all his life.
Data point on that, but go ahead and elaborate before I give you the data point.
A lot of the new info comes from a guy named Steve Hoffenberg, who was convicted of a Ponzi scheme, served like 18 years in prison, and claims that Epstein was in on it, and Epstein stole a lot of the money, and this was one of the pools of money that made his fortune. And he's here in in the National Enquirer this week. I actually recommend this article. It's one of the National Enquirer articles. It's not a fake. It actually imparts information. And Cooper claims that Hoffenberg, who died recently, he had a scheme where he stole money from people and blackmailed them at the same time so they wouldn't come after him for the money he stole. And this was early in his career. He was practicing the arts of blackmail. So I was sort of implausible that he raised his money by blackmailing, because how do you raise that much money by blackmailing people? I guess if you get Leon Black to let you invest $2 billion, you could become rich, but can you amass 600 million that way? I'm not so sure. Plus, it's a very unpleasant life. I mean, Epstein obviously was able to come to that moment where he says, now, Bob, we know what happened at the house. We don't have to go into it, but, I know what happened. You know what happened. So, but where you drive the hard blackmail bargain, it seems very unpleasant to me. I guess it just seems like an unpleasant way for the guy to lives his entire life and raise that much money.
Interject the data point here? But don't forget what we're going to say, like write it down or something. But this is so germane. Julie K. Brown, who wrote this very important Miami Herald piece in, I think, 2018, that kind of brought the whole case back. After Epstein, he had gotten off incredibly light, suspiciously light, whenever it was that he spent a little time in jail in 2007 or whatever, and everything seemed to be going okay for him. She brought this back to light, really good piece in a series in the Miami Herald. I heard her recently say her view was that Epstein, it wasn't like a blackmail racket, but it's like you've got all these powerful guys, some of them rich, and they know you know this stuff, and for all they know, you recorded it. And so you ask them for a favor, and they give you the favor, and it's more stuff like that. And maybe they give you a loan, and maybe they give you some stock, but she thought it was not that explicit. Now, one more data point. Have you ever, this woman, Stacey Williams, have you ever heard her interviewed about this?
It's the Playboy model who allegedly Trump groped?
Not Playboy. She was Sports Illustrated cover model. She was a very, very elite model, and Epstein dated her for several years. And I want to get back to the Trump groping story, but the thing I just heard her say, and by the way, she sounds very credible and also smart, defying some people's stereotypes of supermodels, I would say, very articulate. In fact, she had this great line. It was like, everything Trump does is hidden in his brazenness. In other words, she says, he just does this shit out in public that most people would conceal. And somebody goes, well, I guess it's not as bad as it seems, or it's okay, blah, blah, blah. And she applies that to the groping of her by Trump, which she did in Epstein's presence. But I digress, because that's not the data point I'm talking about. One thing she said, well, two things she said about Epstein. One thing she said is he used to send signals of threats, not explicit threats, but kind of like let you know that he could hurt you if he wanted to. And one thing he said to her, now she didn't connect that to this explicitly, but one thing he said to her, which is fascinating to me in its own right, because I didn't realize we had good evidence that he was secretly videotaping people. But this very credible woman says he said to her once, I've got some videotape of you undressing in the bedroom, and it's just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. So in other words, he makes it sound like it's a romantic thing to say.
Is Epstein saying it or Trump?
Epstein, okay. Saying this about taping in the bedroom in his mansion. She dated him for several months. That's pretty clear. I mean, and like I said, she's credible. She also took a polygraph test and passed it, but She's just very... Did we have hard evidence that he secretly videotaped people before this?
Well, we have Maria Farmer, who claims to have seen the video room with the cameras, and she goes, it went from toilet, bedroom, 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 toilet, okay. bedroom. And for some reason, she's not used that much, and I don't think she's been discredited at all.
But, no, she seems credible. I've heard her interviewed. You know, by the way... I think we have a time lag in our bandwidth. The other interesting thing about her, to get back to Les Wexner, is she, now there's two farmers, and I hope I've got the right one. They're sisters. And, but I think it's Maria who I heard tell the story of how they brought her, Ghislaine and Jeffrey, brought her down to like Les Wexner's vast estate. Les Wexner's house is apparently the biggest house in Ohio, but the whole estate is so big that I think Jeffrey Epstein had a house on it. And in any event, as I recall, Maria Farmer, it was like Jeffrey and Ghislaine like kind of brought her in and tried to get her to do sexual stuff. But anyway, at some point, it was like just right out of a horror movie where she realizes, like, she's kind of trapped in this place. Right. And either she speculates or establishes that, like, the security guards are, like, yeah, there's a guard at the gate, but everybody's in on this. And she finally, I think, somehow gets out. She gets her father to come pick her up or something. Anyway, super weird. The other thing
New Albany, nobody will hear you scream.
Yeah. So that was creepy. By the way, the other thing Daryl Cooper said on Israel is, in his view, it's not that Epstein just worked for Mossad. It's like, as you said, he was a freelancer. He was in bed with the world's shadiest arms dealers. No doubt in touch with other spy agencies like MI6 and CIA, and he would work for anybody. He was a freelancer.
Go ahead, finish your thought when I interrupted you. You were ahead of Maria Farmer.
I'm done.
You had a second Maria Farmer.
I mean, she's infinitely interesting. I mean, she called the cops and tried to get them early to pay attention to Epstein and Fair. They said call the FBI. She called the FBI like nothing happens. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that there's this caucus has grown up of people who, like, I call it the Nothing Burger Caucus, who says it's like nothing there, okay? He was a pervert. He liked to sleep with underage girls. He had an operation that supplied him with underage girls, but he didn't farm them out to other people. He didn't blackmail people. Heaven knows he had nothing to do with Israel. He probably didn't videotape them, okay? But it's surprisingly hard if you knock out the testimony of the two main accusers, Virginia Jeffrey and Sarah Ransom, which they focus a lot of attention on why those two are not wildly credible in all respects. It is hard to come up with the evidence that there is a burger there. The most powerful evidence is that the guy was a blackmailer all his life. I mean, you know, so that's evident that blackmail is not a remote possibility. There's Maria Farmer's evidence about the videotape. There's another woman.
And now Stacey Williams saying that he said to her, I've got secretly taped video of you with no clothes on.
There's another woman who said that remembers Epstein and somebody else laughing at Prince Andrew trying to seduce a topless woman and watching it on video in real time. I've been trying to go through this mental exercise where, you know, what is the evidence we have that doesn't involve these two main accusers? Did they all just make it up like the McMartin preschool? I don't think so.
No.
There's new evidence of, it becomes the evidence of the other people. There's a judge's order that Ann Coulter pointed out in her column this week, where the judge says he recruited these women for his own sexual gratification and for the sexual gratification of others. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what evidence he based it on, but he's a federal judge. He presumably didn't make it up. He may have based it on Jeffrey and Ransom, but I'm not sure. I personally know a friend who had dinner with somebody who'd been on the plane and said everybody on that plane, the Lolita Express, going down to the island knew it was all about sex. They didn't pretend it was, they were not going to the Aspen Institute to hear Tony Blair talk about the future of NATO.
This was somebody who was he was one of these people who was going down to do this?
He was an aide to one of these people.
He would be a great podcast guest for me, Mickey.
He would be a great podcast guest for anybody, and some reporter should interview pronto. The other evidence is from Trump himself. I mean, first there's a Nothing Burger caucus that's attacking the story, and then there is the story that is throwing up all sorts of villains other than Israel, who might have wanted the story suppressed, and that's sort of led by Michael Wolff, who's saying it's all Trump. He makes enough of a case that I'm now convinced it's plausible that there is something on Trump in the tapes, files, whatever.
What's the other theory for why Trump doesn't want the stuff to come out?
Well, we'll get to that. But they make exceptions. Okay, there were no other people except for Trump. Okay. Oh, there were no other people except for Prince Andrew. Eh. Oh, yeah. You know, there were no other people except for, you know, except for this French guy Brunel who committed suicide. Okay. Mm. So once you get past three, I think it's possible that there was a fourth or a fifth or a sixth, right?
I don't know. Frankly, Mickey, I cannot see Bill Clinton breaking his marital vows and having sex with a woman other than Hillary. I don't see it.
Yeah, no, he's clearly in it for something else. His legacy, I think.
I think it's a legacy move.
Anyway, so it's all Trump caucus. Wolf went so far as to suggest that Trump is the one who had Epstein killed in his cell.
Is that Michael Wolf's theory?
He suggests it. He says he talked to Epstein, and Epstein was worried that he was arrested because he wanted to be silent. Was going to be silenced. Who would be most damaged by if Epstein spilled the beans? Well, you know, would be Donald Trump. And who had him arrested? You know, somebody in Donald Trump's administration. So yes, he basically accuses Trump of murder. And there's another. Let me finish. There's a second Michael Wolff thing where he says, I talked to a friend who talked to Trump. He apparently has a lot of friends who talk to Trump constantly. And they immediately blab it to Michael Wolff. And Trump said, you know, they're accusing me now of killing Epstein. And the whoever was on the other end of the phone said, well, did you?
At least he didn't say, didn't you?
He said, no. I said, who do you think killed him? And he said, well, it wasn't me, but there were a whole lot of people who wanted him dead. That's supposedly Trump said this. That is evidence.
So Trump is assuming it wasn't suicide, it sounds like.
Yeah, and Trump is certainly assuming that it's not a Nothing Burger. There's somebody who Epstein pissed off who might want to kill him. Now, it could just be a money laundering person. You know,
No, it's not necessarily somebody pissed off. It's somebody who doesn't. It could be somebody who doesn't want the truth about them revealed, and Epstein has the truth about them. Epstein has the video or something. Epstein has something on them.
Right, that's what I meant. Not pissed off, but would be
the
reason can I? Arrest.
Yeah, let me ask you.
That evidence that nobody has picked up on. But go ahead.
I want to save this subject of the suicide for a little later, but I can't help but first just ask, by way of preview, what do you think the chances are that it was murder and not suicide?
I was going to say the chances that it was suicide are asymptotically approaching zero. But there was a little bit of discordant evidence where you sent me something or something I read about how the troopers that escorted Epstein to a court appearance filed a form saying, check this guy out, he seems suicidal. Okay? That seems strong evidence, possible evidence in favor of suicide. Those guys presumably are pretty jaded. They've seen hundreds of prisoners. They can recognize the signs when they see it. They didn't have much to gain. They did it before he committed suicide. They did it in real time on an official government form. So that's the one discordant note that leads me to think. Bob, there's an important principle here, which is the Masaryk principle, which is Masaryk was the democratic opposition to communists in Czechoslovakia after the war. And he fell from a second story window to his death. And everybody assumed he'd been murdered. But his key aide said, no, he was depressed and suicidal. And the Masaryk rule is just because you're depressed and suicidal doesn't mean you weren't murdered. Often you're depressed and suicidal because you know you're going to be murdered. That he was suicidal doesn't mean he wasn't killed.
Well, the other thing is, any murder conspiracy theory here assumes that some number of people were brought into the plot. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess the marshals who were escorted him somewhere or something are for some reason unlikely people to be brought into the plot. I don't understand how these things are supposed to work. I don't understand how, if there are these people who are so powerful that they can just designate that somebody in a federal prison be killed, I don't know what their infrastructure is. You know, I don't know how, I honestly don't know how it would work. But
want to get into that now? Because we can talk about that now. I mean,
let me say one more thing I learned about Trump and Epstein that was interesting. It's actually two things juxtaposed, okay? What we had already heard, what's gotten a certain amount of attention is some woman who was one of Epstein's young women, and he says, hey, let's go up and see Donald Trump, you know? And they go up to Trump's suite, and Epstein says to Trump, she's not here for you, I think was a quote. It's sometimes rendered as she's not for you. That's pretty different. But when I heard her say it, or when I saw it in quotes, it was she's not here for you. Anyway, the sense was there that this you could infer that this is a thing that's happened. And sometimes Epstein brings up women that are for Trump and sometimes women that aren't for Trump, whatever. Anyway, the thing I heard today listening to Stacey Williams, woman, is the one who dated Epstein for several months. This is a fascinating story and leads to a conjecture of mine about one thing Trump and Epstein were kind of up to. So he does the same thing with her. They're taking a walk, which he says they often did. Like, they would take walks around New York. And he says, let's go see Trump. They go up, and Trump is in the room. Epstein is in the room. And Trump starts, like, rubbing her body. And before long, he's, like, groping her, like, buttocks, breasts. And by her account, she was super young then. She was, like, I don't know, 22 or something. And she says she just like froze. And I think one reason was Epstein was in the room she says Epstein and Trump would look at each other and they'd smile. And so she says she just like put up with it for a little while. And then they leave and Epstein starts screaming at her for tolerating it and letting Trump do it. And here's her theory. The interviewer said, well, do you think it was a setup? He and Epstein set this up. And she said, I don't know, but I had said to Epstein in the past that I've sometimes been tough with men. Like when it was clear that if I went to bed with a fashion photographer and if like even my agent or somebody, you know, conveyed this, I'd be like, no. And like, So she had given Epstein this image of her as somebody who could rebuff men. So one theory is, her theory kind of was, that Epstein this was a test. Epstein thought, well, then maybe she'll rebuff Trump. Now, if you put these two stories together, so two women have gone up, been escorted up to Trump by Epstein, and it gets weird in different senses. What I'm imagining may well have been the case is that this was almost a ritual with Trump. Like Epstein would bring these young, usually more vulnerable than this woman. You know, she was a more worldly. She'd been around the block, and that's why maybe Epstein thought she would rebuff him. But I'm guessing the ritual was Epstein brings these women up and Trump kind of fondles them in his presence, which maybe makes it less likely for them to start screaming and run off. And then Trump's kind of gotten to first base. And interestingly, this woman, Stacey Williams, has a postcard from Trump, and she still has it. She said she didn't, you know, it's been documented that this is legit, that Trump sent her right after this with a picture of Mar-a-Lago on it, and it said, to Stacey, you are my home away from home, after this one encounter, Donald. And so you can imagine, like, Epstein brings these women up, Trump gets to first base with them, tries to go all the way for a home run. It works often enough. I don't know. The other thing this woman said is that Epstein didn't talk about any of his friends nearly as much as he talked about Donald Trump. I mean, I think there were some sick shit right. going on with Epstein and Trump. I also think they're both sick as shit, but.
Yeah. Okay, but first, the woman in the first encounter was former, I think, so.
Okay. Yeah. And I have found her credible.
As long as everybody knows Trump's a womanizer, as long as they're not underage, the tapes are not enough to cause this crisis in the government for him. That is, if they reveal that he fondled Epstein's date and she was 22, it's not a story he can't survive. And this is a, you know, it's
you mean the Epstein files generally?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking for what motivated Trump to clamp down on the Epstein files suddenly? Okay. Mm-hmm. And there are four candidates. Okay. One is there was something so damaging to Trump that he really couldn't have it be public, up to the point of almost destroying his coalition and lowering his popularity and costing him the Congress in the midterms. Okay. Groping a 22-year-old woman or having some deal with Epstein where they trade 22-year-old women, that's not enough. Okay. It's got to be underage or something more disgusting.
Well, I'm saying a lot of these women were underage, probably, that Epstein brought up.
Neither the woman in these two anecdotes were underage. That's the point. And then
I understand that, but I think Trump
makes the big point about how a lot of them are overage, thereby destroying the idea that there's something in it that Trump fears, okay? So the Nothing Burger Caucus is working against the Michael Wolff, it's Trump Caucus, okay?
Yeah, but I don't see their argument. I mean, look, I don't think it's necessarily the case that Trump knows about this one thing in the files that will sink him. I think it could be that he just knows that, yeah, there were underage women and there was a lot of bad shit. And so he doesn't want to get dragged further into this thing, period.
Well, but there's a timing problem with that, which is he's known that for a long time. And he let the Epstein thing fester and fester and fester. And then all of a sudden clamped down a couple of months ago. Why would he suddenly realize that this shit was in the files that he knew was there all along was going to hurt? Yeah. It's completely implausible. But let me get through the other three candidates. The third candidate is a lot of other big shots. You know, who are implicated, like maybe whose names begin with Bill. Trump would rather have, you know, Trump wants to protect them and he would rather have them under his control and in his debt than exposed. The third thing is Israel or somebody else who might be embarrassed by the full disclosure of the files. And the fourth thing, which Michael Wolff brings in, is Melania. That Melania has clamped down because Melania is somehow connected with Epstein in an embarrassing way. It's almost as if Michael Wolff is looking for any reason other than Israel for why Trump would clamp down. So there are those four, okay? I think the Trump one has...
So you have a Michael Wolff conspiracy theory? He's part of a conspiracy to suppress the Israel conspiracy theory? I like this, Mickey. I like where this is going.
It's going to get worse than that, believe me.
Okay.
Very shortly. The Trump thing has a... timing problem. The others, the protecting others, I think we can rule that out now. Trump has gotten himself into so much shit by clamping down. He would rather throw the others overboard at this point. He's not gonna destroy his presidency to save Bill Gates. Okay, so those people don't rate.
Well, maybe they have dirt on him though. Maybe they could say, look, Trump was there on the island. I saw what he did.
Well, that gets back to the Trump thing. And if you think, then it just merges into the Trump explanation. The Melania problem has the virtue for Michael Wolff. That is powerful enough that Trump would risk his presidency.
Yeah, but Melania, I don't see that.
Presumably he's his wife and presumably has a lot of dirt. Okay. So the solution.
Wait,
the
theory here is that Melania did. Wait, elaborate. I'm not sure I understand. You're saying she may have been involved with Epstein or what?
That somehow she was involved with Epstein before she met Trump in a humiliating way. She was a model. Maybe she was
a model.
She was introduced to Trump by Epstein, although that sort of she denies that. That's not what she says in the book. Maybe. Michael Wolff is very oracular on this. He doesn't say what the Melania thing is. But the point is, it's not a crazy theory because it's powerful enough to make Trump clamp down. Suppose Trump is going along and saying, well, let the Epstein things be exposed. And Melania says, no, you won't. And Trump immediately has the Justice Department put out this memo saying, nothing to see here. We're not releasing any more information. Okay. The solution to the timing problem, I'm not saying that the Trump theory that there's something on Trump there is crazy. It's not crazy at all. It's plausible, but it has this timing problem. Why didn't he shut it down earlier? One possibility is there was something there he thought he'd taken care of. He thought it wasn't there, or he thought he dealt with it. Epstein maybe promised him, "Oh, there's nothing on you here, Donald." And then all of a sudden he realized it was there. And crack down. The best theory is the full Alex Jones harmonic convergence theory, which is he thought he'd taken care of it, and then Bibi Netanyahu shows up with the files that he's gotten from Mossad, and that Israel made it clear to Trump that yes, he was on the tapes, and so it's a merger of harmonic convergence of the Trump and Israel theories, and Israel is in fact blackmailing Trump by saying he is on the tapes. And the reason they're blackmailing Trump is because they want the tapes suppressed too, which is why Trump does this 180 and clamps down a couple of months ago. And even though Alex Jones had this theory immediately, that doesn't mean it's wrong.
This is literally an Alex Jones theory. He has embraced.
It was literally his first. His initial reaction, like when I was just starting to like read about this, was, Israel presented him with the files. There's even a cartoon. There are cartoons around the web of Bibi presenting the files to Trump. It's like, the Israel thing is plausible because the Israel thing fits the timing. Okay, he needs Israel for the Middle East. Okay, he's trying to cut some deal in the Middle East. If he can throw them a bone by suppressing the Epstein files and get something for it, he's going to do it.
Well, wait, Israel needs him for the Middle East, too. Now, I don't personally find this a very credible theory, the Alex Jones, but I will say Israel wanted things from Trump, like let us ethnically cleanse Gaza. I mean, I don't know what the exact timing was, but help us attack Iran. In fact, we'd like you to bomb Iran. And Donald said, okay, we'll bomb Iran. So, you could construct a model that's plausible. It to me, it just seems a little too much like something out of a movie.
This is the Israel annex theory, which is some blogger in the, I think, Jerusalem Post or the Times of Israel wrote that Israel dropped this on Trump because he only bombed for a day. They wanted him to bomb for a week. So,
definitely did disappoint them. But still, they got the precedent set that the U.S. will bomb Iran. That's a big thing for Bibi. He's pretty happy. And Trump is not getting in the way of the ethnic cleansing of Gaza or increasingly the West Bank.
That's what I think. It seems to me it's pretty petty of Israel to say, well, you only broke through this longstanding precedent and threatened your coalition in order to help us, but you didn't do it long enough. I mean, that's like the old story that I think the ending is he had a hat when, you know, like God saves the guy's kid from drowning, and then but the guy isn't satisfied. He yells at God, he had a hat. Okay. I mean, you know, this was Leon Wieseljaer's favorite story, I think.
Leon had his moments. No, actually, this would be very much like Beebe. I still find the overall thing kind of implausible because it's just so cinematic. But Beebe always wants more, and he's used to getting it. Why not? But where are we here? What have we?
We've gone through the various possible.
I know what I was going to ask. So I'm going to read you something, if I can find it, from the American Conservative, which, of course, is, you know, kind of MAGA land and kind of also not super enthusiastic about our relationship with Israel land. It's a magazine that was founded by Pat Buchanan. This is from a piece by Andrew Day. More and more Americans are wondering why their government, it gets around to Epstein. More and more Americans are wondering why their government spends billions each year supporting the wealthy, powerful, and increasingly belligerent Mideast nation. Many are learning for the first time that the Israel lobby, not American interest, drives the U.S. policy of unconditional support. Thus, Trump's attempt to squash the Epstein scandal comes at a time when many Americans are primed to suspect that he's doing so on Israel's behalf. No proof has emerged that Epstein worked for Mossad, Israel's National Intelligence Agency, as he reportedly boasted. Still, prominent MAGA voices have plausibly argued that Epstein was an agent or asset for Israel. And my question to you, Mickey Kaus, as someone who himself is no stranger to MAGA land, is the Israel part of this a big driving force within MAGA? Is that the go-to theory about not only what Epstein was up to, what motivated him, but what is motivating Trump to suppress the files?
It's certainly Tucker's theory. I was annoyed at Ross Douthat for sort of seemingly dismissing the Mossad theory because, well, that's as the base turns on Israel, they would logically, you know, pursue this MAGA thing, ignoring all the evidence that there is for it, and maybe the base is being rational. I'm a bad thermometer for figuring out how anti-Israel the base is, since I don't really have much contact with the base. I assume that, you know, with Marjorie Taylor Greene running around denouncing Trump for being too nice to Israel and probably getting primaried for her efforts, that there is a lot of anti-Israel sentiment. But is that the Epstein thing is just maddening. I mean, it drove you crazy. It drove Tucker crazy. It drove like Daryl Cooper crazy because there's this big mystery there that probably involves, a level of corruption in government that we don't know about. And we don't know the answer. So it drives people crazy. It drives me crazy.
It's like powerful people have too much power. And this is definitely, at a minimum, an example of powerful people having too much power and abusing it in some sense.
A couple of little pieces of the pro Mossad thing. First, when we say Mossad, we mean not an employee of Mossad, but a freelancer who maybe helped out Mossad with some information. Maybe it wasn't valuable information, but if you look at it wasn't. If you listen to Barry Weiss and Douthat on their podcast, they say, "Well, the Mossad the Mossad theory couldn't be true because there's no tradecraft involved." I mean, they sent Ehud Barak to live with Venice, to live with Epstein, to be his handler. That's out in the open. No spy would do that. No spy would do what Epstein is doing. Have it out in the open, this almost out in the open, this sex ring. So my answer is, yeah, it doesn't involve the usual tradecraft, but Epstein had Bill Clinton and maybe Bill Gates, and he had all these big shots on the hook. Okay? That's useful information. Maybe Mossad is agile enough to think this is an unorthodox alternative system of getting information, and maybe we want to take advantage of it by getting some of that information. Okay? It doesn't mean they financed him. It doesn't mean he was a member of Mossad. It just means he was giving information to Mossad. Maybe it wasn't even important information, but maybe it was just giving Mossad, knowing that they could blackmail Bill Clinton, or even they could blackmail subtly Donald Trump in the pinch. Maybe that's certainly valuable. So fuck the tradecraft. The tradecraft is not a dispositive argument. So there's that's more of a theoretical point. They've discovered Ehud Barak's notation in the famous birthday book that Ghislaine Maxwell put together, the one where Trump seems to imply that he and Epstein shared a secret that might be that they both had sex with underage girls. And this is what.
By the way, what do you think the secret is? I think it's more prosaic than that. Now, prosaic's too complimentary a word for what I think it is, but
I guess the secret is have as much sex as possible.
Exactly. The secret to life is getting some and getting it every day. I think that's what it means.
And that's not what that's not enough for Trump to behave the way he's behaving.
Ehud
Barak. A lot depends. Even if he was married at the time, if he cheated on his wife, that's like the oldest news in the book. I'm sorry. He practically went on Howard Stern, and would confess it the next day. Ehud Barak wrote in this book to Epstein, "You are like a closed book to many of them, but you know everything about everyone." Okay? That's a little suggestive on the part of, a former spy master for Israel.
Was he a former spy master? He was former prime minister. Had he also been the head of Mossad?
I think he had something to do with Mossad, yeah. That's why I said that with a little hesitation, but I'm pretty sure.
Do you think he's
prime minister of Israel, he was running the Mossad by definition.
At one point. And, Israel's a small country. It's a small elite, when I was there, I was struck by how small and also kind of informal it is. I like accidentally walked into a meeting and I just opened a door in the foreign ministry, which I'd gotten into courtesy of Marty Peretz, basically. Shimon Peres leading a meeting with a bunch of wrong room. At this point he was foreign minister. He had been or would be prime minister. Do you think they clearly either explicitly or implicitly made a deal with Ghislaine? I mean, she suddenly goes to this country club prison after talking to this guy who was Trump's personal lawyer as well as now a government official.
I have one more bit of evidence.
Okay.
About Mossad, which is the Telegraph had a story interviewing Epstein's butler, who was this very seemingly very pleasant, gregarious French guy who loved Epstein. There was a picture of him. He took Epstein to the plane ride that took him to be arrested at Teterboro Airport. And the picture of the two of them on the plane, and Epstein is wearing an IDF sweatshirt. It has the IDF emblem. I think it even says Israel Defense Force.
Not covering his tracks as well as you would expect a Mossad operative.
And of course, Michael Tracy, who's the leader of the Nothing Burger Caucus, immediately said it was an AI fake.
I should have him on, yeah.
But you should, but...
That it's an AI fake. Well, can't they find that?
He doesn't seem to be getting any traction on it. It's just a weird-looking picture. And the guy... the Telegraph had got it from the guy from his personal collection. He presumably is not a master of AI and to fake this picture.
Is this guy's name Jojo?
Sorry, what?
What? Is this guy's name JoJo? But Epstein's butler. Is his name JoJo?
I don't know. I forget. I forgot his nickname.
Anyway, there was a butler.
He specializes in making Brazilian cheese balls, which he said were a favorite of Bill Gates.
I'm not going anywhere with that.
And Gates visited Epstein's Parisian home in the quest for eternal quest for funding for his do good initiatives.
Okay. So the Ghislaine Maxwell question, which I think I abandoned in mid ask. By the way, I just want to say on the Mossad, it's possible that there's a lot of pro-Israel money getting Epstein to exert as much pro-Israel influence as he can with influential and powerful people. And yet the Mossad's just not very much involved or not involved at all. That's possible, right?
It's possible he's giving them information that they don't want and they scorn. I don't think so. These are pretty smart people, Wexner and Brossman and Black.
They would get their money's worth, do you think?
I just think they would hear that your information is crap and they would stop funding it. I don't think he was funded by his espionage work, such as it was, if it was. I am now partial to the money laundering explanation because if you listen to Daryl Cooper, he was and if you listen to Hoffenberg, this ex
now dead
Ponzi scheme guy, he was involved in money laundering from the beginning. I mean, his job was to hide money for rich people, and he was fired from Bear Stearns for going too far in hiding money to rich people and veering it to money laundering. So I barely know what money laundering is, but he seems to have known everything about it and been very good at it. And you can make a lot of money laundering.
Then he worked closely with a shady arms dealer.
Right.
Kasaji, I think, who was involved in the Iran-Contra thing. So yeah, he was all about doing illicit shit with money.
So it's entirely possible that he had, apparently you can't do that now because it's all done with Bitcoin. So you have to have an extra level of skills that maybe Epstein had or didn't have, but you have to be able to deal with the Bitcoin.
We'll never find out, sadly.
It drives with some other information I have about, I mean, he's clearly, Epstein is clearly much more criminal adjacent than people think.
Look, I think Les Wexner is mobbed up. I mean, come on.
Bring it on.
I know you think that's a mistake because he'll have me off, but that'll just prove it. I take that back. I don't think Les Wexner is mobbed up at all. So that I just want to be clear on my position because I know there's been some ambiguity in the past, Mickey. I just want to say, I don't think he's mobbed up at all, but I would point this out. The guy who's the closest, I forget the details, but we discussed this long ago. The guy who was the closest to being Epstein's predecessor in working for Wexner, and I think Epstein's role was so unusual that there was no clear-cut predecessor, but the closest thing to one, like the day before he's supposed to testify in some trial, he gets rubbed out. Like he gets, right. I think it's a clear mob hit. I mean, and Wexner.
He was crossing the street and got in an unfortunate accident, I think, no?
Oh, is that the way? Well, these things happen, you know, at funny times.
Go ahead, sir.
By the way, I didn't realize, I knew that when Vanity Fair was, when Vicky Ward was working on this profile for Vanity Fair of Epstein before it was a scandal, I think even it was before he was indicted even, right? But she caught wind of some weird shit and Epstein wanted to make sure it didn't make it into the article. I already knew that Graydon Carter, who was the editor of Vanity Fair at that time, as the piece was coming together, opened his front door and found, I think, a bullet shell on the porch. But yeah. Did you hear, I think it was Daryl Cooper, somebody said that meanwhile, he went to his vacation home or something, and there was the severed head of a cat?
That's what he said. That's what I was going to mention. That is the public evidence that Epstein was closer to some really bad, violent people.
Oh, man.
Creepy
motherfucker. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't like to judge people, but I think Jeffrey Epstein was not a good person.
I was amazed by Cooper also because just discovering that Epstein was involved in all these scandals, including not just the Ponzi scheme, but the Iran-Contra scandal, all of Khashoggi's arms dealing. There's just, I was toying with the idea of rewriting Mojo Nixon's greatest song, which is called Elvis is Everywhere. Have you read it? Have you heard it? It's a good song. Mm-mm. But it's sort of like, it's about how Elvis is involved with everything. You know, who built the pyramid? Elvis. Who built Stonehenge? Elvis. Well, you could do the same thing with Epstein. Epstein is everywhere. Who was in Iran-Contra? Epstein. You know, who built Stonehenge? Epstein. Who started the Gaza War? Epstein. You know, it's like, it's incredible all the things he had his fingers in. But some of them were really violent. So that led me to think he was probably capable of dealing with money launderers who tend to be, you know, El Chapo and people like that. So I don't think he had to get his money from the pro-Israel backers. Although he got a lot of money from Wexner, and Wexner is a pro-Israel backer. Wexner, by the way, Wexner just made $2 billion on some bizarre software play. So,
oh, man.
I don't think he cares about the accusations.
By the way, this Stacey Williams says that after a few months of dating Epstein, she says it wasn't all that sexual. He was not, she said, maybe I was too old for him. I think she was in her early 20s. And I mean, I think there was sex, I assume. But anyway, so the way she ended it, she says, was she called him and she said, basically, like, you're sick and you need professional help and I don't want anything else to do with you. This was after, like, the Trump groping, and Epstein goes ballistic after him saying, you know, the video. And sound like there were a lot of other data points she didn't share. Anyway, that's an answer.
He definitely had legitimate girlfriends throughout this whole period.
Yeah, yeah. I think this was one he was proud to be seen with. She was super elite, and she hung out with the celebrities. So on the Ghislaine thing, I mean, is there any serious doubt that there was either an implicit or explicit deal with Ghislaine that led her to be transferred to this country club prison?
Well, I think it's a combination of explicit deal and the fact that if she's talking at all and she thinks Epstein was killed, she's in danger in a, you know, high security prison, and she's in less danger in this minimum security prison, where
ironically.
Well, as you know, and I forgot to point this out, my explanation for why were the security guards at the prison better witnesses than who took him to the prison, the marshals, better witnesses than the people staffing the prison who seemed to be in on the conspiracy? The answer is, as listeners to this podcast know, I think the prison was run by a gang. And the gang...
The whole prison? The whole prison?
Well, no, not the whole... Well, it was a skyscraper. No, the gang ran certain floors of the prison. Maybe not all of them. But, you know, look at what happened to the video and the latest evidence. The Justice Department presents this. There's this video, and look, it doesn't show anybody entering Epstein's cell. Well, A, it's missing 1 minute to 8 minutes, maybe half an hour. B, it was edited and spliced in a way that whoever edited and spliced it left the cursor in. C, it doesn't really prove that nobody entered Epstein's cell because it focuses on this one stairway and only captures like one eighth of it. And you could easily walk up the other 7/8. And the fourth is, it does show somebody entering Epstein's cell, okay? So there's,
well,
the video is...
When is that, complete. Though? When is...
It was a couple
of hours before he was... You mean the orange arm?
Yeah. The is carrying the sheets with which Epstein is going to kill himself. So it's...
Well, you can't see the sheets, but I think the officials claim that what you're seeing there is somebody delivering... I don't know. I forget.
But they never leave. They never leave coming down. And the fifth thing is, Julie Brown claims there was a back way, that this wasn't the only way out. So The video is crap, and it destroys the credibility of all of the MAGA Justice Department officials who presented it. See, this video is conclusive. So Dan Bongino has zero credibility left. I don't see how he survives. Patel has zero credibility left. Bondi has zero credibility left. And Blanche has zero credibility. So Blanche goes down to... this whole thing stinks. I mean, it was John Gotti, and that somebody was going to testify at John Gotti. John Gotti said gets to send his representative to interview the guy first before he testifies to see what he's got against him. Trump is a suspect in this case. He can't send his henchman down to negotiate with Ghislaine. Plus, the idea that they would make it public, I mean, wasn't this a proffer where the witness says, here's what I might say on the stand if you give me immunity? They're going to make that public? Then she might as well not testify. It's already out in the public. It seems totally unorthodox and unethical for Blanche to do this if he weren't discredited already. And so, obviously Ghislaine knows exactly what's going on. And, you know, basically Trump could write Ghislaine's testimony the way he wants it now by having Blanche say, well, that'll do, you know, and I'm sure she'll deliver. And, that's the best way out for Trump. But it is a way that prolongs the scandal. So Harry Enten saying, oh, nobody's Googling Epstein anymore. Well, if Ghislaine testifies, they're going to be Googling him again. Okay. And he's going to be back in the news. And so Trump has this dilemma. I think at this point, he may be winning the PR war so well that he would rather Ghislaine go away and not make a big deal of her testimony. And I don't see how he gets away with that. But if I were Ghislaine, I would worry that Trump would say, oh, he doesn't need me to get through this scandal.
But to a rational person, the fact that she's transferred to this country club prison increases the probability you would assign to the proposition that Trump is trying to conceal something, right? I mean, what's the other explanation?
She's going to say what Trump wants her to say. All right. I'm saying is there are more than one cause. It may also be that in the course of saying anything, she worries about her safety.
Yeah. I want to get back to the question of how much damage this is or isn't doing to Trump.
If Trump wants to squelch the scandal, he doesn't want her killed. That would prolong the scandal.
Yeah, but transferring her to in a rational world, transferring her to this country club also increases the amount of suspicious attention he gets, because it's hard to explain it otherwise. What's that?
You can explain it otherwise. I don't think that's the real story. But
what's the other explanation?
Her own safety. She was worried about getting killed. She's the last truth teller we have. We can't afford to have her killed. Less information.
Well, I mean, again, you would think that if there is anybody, you would think that if there's anybody who has the power to ensure that a maximum security prison is really maximum security in a secure, thoroughgoing sense of the word. In other words, the prisoners won't escape and they also won't be killed. You'd think the president could arrange for that, right?
He couldn't. He couldn't do it. They couldn't do it in Manhattan. That was a maximum security prison, and the prisoner was killed.
Yeah, but in this theory, they wanted him dead. They wanted Epstein dead. They wouldn't have tried to protect him.
That's one theory.
Well, isn't the main theory that somebody in the executive branch wanted him dead? You think it was a drug deal gone bad or something?
The main theory was always that the committee of Epstein clients wanted him dead. And the second main theory is that the Mossad wanted him dead. Or maybe they all wanted him dead and they split the check three ways through Venmo. I mean,
So you think they may have gone through these gangs without any help from the Bureau of Prisons, anybody in the Bureau of Prisons?
The gang ran the prison. Okay. They told the guards what to do.
Wait, where's the evidence for this? Well, is this true?
I've told you this before.
I know you. What is the evidence? What is the evidence?
I have a friend who knows somebody who served time in that prison, and the person said everybody was terrified of these gangs, and the gangs, in effect, ran the prison.
Running it in the sense of being able to orchestrate a murder like this.
It's exactly like being able to orchestrate a murder. You say,
no,
you
tell to the say guard, they, in effect,
at some crucial point in the video, the main guard goes off to another wing of the prison for an hour. Okay. You say, why don't you go off to another wing of the prison for an hour and let us do what we want with Epstein? Then you come back and discover him dead.
Is it documented that the guard was away for an hour? This is the woman?
I mean, for a substantial period of time. I don't know if it was an hour. You sent me that tape, but I watched it. You sent me that video.
Well, I don't remember that being established. That was a YouTube analysis done by a guy who I find dubious, but he did. There is interesting stuff in the video. And I would say on that subject, the videotapes, I mean, far from being exonerating, as some people kind of remarkably claim, I would say that they are a little damning. I mean, at least in somewhat increasing the chances that it was a murder in the following sense. I talked to Paul Bloom about this. Like, there's five cameras, okay? Three of them had a direct view of his cell. You would not have been able to get into or out of a cell if we had video from those three cameras. Wouldn't you know it? We don't. We the one camera we have video from is the one that shows, like, as you said, it's about an eighth of the staircase. It's clearly possible to get up and down that staircase, if you know that you're part of a murder that we would like to conceal, to get up and down that staircase without showing up on the video. And the great thing about leaving that camera running is we can have these people out saying, no, there was a camera on the staircase, and most people don't look into it, and it sounds plausible.
And if you were a gang that ran the prison, you would know where the cameras are. You'd know which cameras to disable. You'd know how to disable them. You would know which camera to leave on. You would know how to edit the tape from that camera so it looks as best.
Well,
presented the best story. It all fits.
I would say it isn't just that you would know that. You would have to have the participation of someone who works for the prison, I think.
And the participation of the guards.
Well, that's what I mean. So, yeah, of course you'd know. The guards know about the video.
The guards are intimidated. The gangs boss the guards around. They don't necessarily boss William Barr around. He's the attorney general. He's in charge of the whole thing. But they boss around the lower level people who are staffing the prison. Now, they shut the prison down, Bob. They shut the prison down for a reason.
Who shut it down?
They lost control of it, you know?
Who shut it down?
They shut it down right after the Epstein murder.
Yeah. There's a lot of weird stuff. I mean, first of all, the cameras, but also the guards, because he was on suicide watch, they were supposed to visit him every half hour. And as I understand it, they just never did. I mean, they went like 8 hours without checking in on him. And they admittedly, it is now established, they falsified the records of what they were doing that night. They went back later and filled them out. Now it can be at a place like this that that's kind of routine. Nobody ever checks the record. So yeah, you don't do it for a couple of days and then you fill in shit and you're fine. That happens.
It's like adding a new wing on a Boeing airliner. They want you to fill out all these forms, but we fake.
Yeah, we see what happens. The final note against the murder theory is just that, or at least some evidence that not everybody at the prison was in on it. If you look at the cell they put him in, and I gather did they move him to this place after there was there was a suicide problem, even after he had allegedly tried to commit suicide, right?
Yes. I have something to say about that. Go ahead.
Okay, but the way that the thing is structured, there's like a total of, so it's like a split level where the guards are at the intermediate level, and there's three staircases where they can go up half a flight, and along each of those three halls, there's eight cells, or they can go down half a flight and see along each of the three halls. So there's like a total of 48 cells, and Epstein is put in the cell that is most visible, and one of the few that is visible at all, even remotely, maybe the only one that's visible at all, from the desk where the guard sits. Direct line of sight. And you wouldn't think that whoever made that decision wanted him murdered.
It is interesting. I agree with that. The gang said, no, we have second, you put him in this prominent cell, but we have other plans for him. The first suicide attempt, there was an interesting article, I think in the Daily Beast, by a tax criminal who had served before Epstein and was, you know, sophisticated enough that he was part of the suicide committee that went and interviewed people, fellow inmates, to try to stop them from committing suicide. And it turns out, if you Google his name, it turns out he was he basically ran a big escort service, or he ran software that helped. He was like a huge digital pimp, and they got him for not paying the taxes on his huge earnings from. He's a pretty smart guy, savvy guy, good writer, and he says he interviewed Epstein. He was the guy who interviewed Epstein after the suicide attempt, and Epstein was clearly, you know, saying yes, I tried to commit suicide, and you know, I'm happy now. And Epstein clearly did not want to go into it, implying he did not try to commit suicide. He was somebody tried to kill him, but he doesn't want to piss off the other people in the prison by being a whiner and a Karen, and say, oh, they tried to kill me, because that was the best way. He realized that was the best way to get killed. Mm. So he gave the authorities a bullshit cover story. I think that takes care of the first suicide attempt. He had some evidence of, he said he had a friend who worked in the kitchen who had the adjoining cell who didn't hear anything that night. So that's a bit of evidence against the suicide theory, but it basically argues that they had to go up with pre-ripped sheets. They couldn't have ripped the sheets in the cell. They had to come up with sheets that were pre-ripped.
Well, that's the other question, is how do you do the murder without it being so loud? I think there was, what, two or three other prisoners, two or three other cells occupied in that hall or something? Like, well, if they're not in on it.
Gangs know how to do this.
What?
Gangs know how to do this. If you look at his neck, it looks like he was garroted. So how much sound, how much noise do you make after you're garroted? Not much.
I've never tried, but... Wouldn't they have to like go into a cell and he'd be going, no, 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 don't garrote me. Don't garrote me, bro.
Maybe he would say, I have a girl for you. I don't know. How would you like $100 million deposit to your account? Something like that. I don't know. Maybe he was asleep.
That's risky. I remain kind of agnostic. I would say the chances are at least 50% that he was murdered, but I don't see why you think the chances are like over 90 or something, right?
Yeah, 85, something like that, yeah.
I guess I don't quite see that much. I mean, you can construct a scenario whereby it could kind of happen. And again, there's suggestive evidence. I mean, the five video cameras, which ones are working? Pretty weird. And there are a number of people who say, look, he wasn't the kind who would ever give up. On the other hand, wasn't there some data dump? Didn't Ghislaine or something do, was it a bunch of beyond embarrassing, incriminating maybe evidence coming out right about then, or am I misremembering?
I remember that too, but it obviously wasn't that incriminating because it came and went and there wasn't much fuss about it. He had some good arguments. He not only had he had a good. The one part Darryl Cooper got wrong was he implied that he was arrested because they had invalidated the sentence from his earlier conviction. I don't think that's true. I think they had a new case against him, and so he had a good double jeopardy argument against that case that he'd already signed. The government had already promised they weren't going to prosecute him. You know, so why are they reneging on this deal? And apparently the judge was interested in that. So there was, and he had a couple of other good legal arguments that if you're a prisoner, the prisoners I've seen, they always think they're going to get released on appeal. They have an optimistic view, and he would have that optimistic view. He'd beat the odds before, he can beat it again.
You would think he would be the kind who thinks he can get out of anything. That's kind of the way I have him profiled.
Not that he wouldn't, he might break and have moments of despondence, you know, as do we all.
Don't we?
There are a couple other points I wanted to make. One is, one was that you don't need Israel supplying the his money. The second mm-hmm. thing is I don't think he had blackmail on Wexner. I think either Wexner was in love with him or they were both doing duty for their favorite country.
Wexner was providing the resources. I don't imagine he had blackmail on Wexner. Wexner was somebody who wanted to fund his operation.
Apparently that's a common theory. And Daryl Cooper hints at it. He says, they used to call Epstein the boyfriend, but both of them deny it. He quickly got off it. Okay. But he clearly was infatuated with Epstein in some way, no doubt platonic. He was a mesmerizing figure. The other thing is I originally thought that Epstein might be running a giant sex ring where 100 of the top Fortune 500 CEOs stopped by and had underage sex or sex. And it was all kept secret, so he could blackmail the huge chunk of the American ruling class. I now tend to think it was a lot smaller bore deal, not involving hundreds of businessmen, but maybe dozens of businessmen. But there were some big shots there. It was like an impromptu, improvised Jerry built structure, but it did have Bill Clinton and Bill Gates and a whole bunch of other people on that plane. It just wasn't the vast, he didn't need a vast computerized, matrix to keep track of everybody. No.
I just quickly say, I agree with the Jerry built. And in fact, I think I would say this was not a strictly professional operation in any event, in the sense that, his libido was apparently a very peculiar and active thing. And he just had his own weird sex shit. And I think the gratification of it is kind of what gets the ball rolling here. I mean, I think whatever the operation became, kind of worked in synergy with his own fetishes and obsession. So it's not like somebody said, Jeffrey, I know you're not enthusiastic about sex, but we'd like you to go set up this apparatus. No, I think it just kind of happened. Whatever it was, just kind of happened.
But I mean, the idea which some of the nothing burger people promote, which is all these girls running around, but the only person they had sex with was Epstein, or maybe Epstein and Trump, or maybe Epstein and Trump and Prince Andrew. That seems wildly implausible to me. We had all these people flying down all Lolita, on the Lolita Express to the island, thinking it's all about sex. They became abstemious and chaste when they were there. I don't think so. There's that tape you sent me of the woman who accused Trump of having violated her when she was 13. And it says,
it turned out there. that was from a long time ago, but
right, yeah. It was from 2016 or something. But he had Trump walking in an orgy. Is the orgy just Epstein having sex with 16 different women? I don't think so. Okay. I think there were other men involved. There's that. And also the other point I wanted to make is I don't really care. It doesn't matter that much if the girls were underage. I'm sorry. You can run a very good blackmail ring for the Mossad with overage girls. And in fact, if you listen to Eric Weinstein's podcast on this years ago, where he was mortified as a supporter of Israel that the likelihood that Mossad was behind it, that he had met with Epstein, so he was spinning his mm-hmm. theories on the basis of that meeting. He was speculating, was it a plus or a minus for the Mossad that Epstein was into underage girls? Was it just did it make the blackmail stronger that you had these guys in this incredibly compromising position? Or was it just something that the Mossad would rather not deal with, but that's just Epstein, he likes these underage girls, so it's a what's the word in Darwinian evolution where you have a
something spandrel?
It's a spandrel for the Mossad. So it means the whole lot. Was she 16? Was she 22? Doesn't matter. It's still compromise on whoever is.
Yeah, we should emphasize on your behalf that when you're saying when you say the age of the women doesn't matter, you're not saying for purposes of moral judgment or criminal prosecution, just whether it would be ineffective, whether it could be used for blackmail purposes.
Saying. I am mainly outraged. I'm sorry. I think it is morally abhorrent. It's a horribly destructive to the girls to do it. He should be locked up forever. But what propels it into a national scandal capable of crippling a presidency is the accountability problem of the elites getting away with murder again. The murder again, and also the possibility that a foreign power had corrupted major officials through a sex ring, which doesn't require a minor, an underage sex ring. So it's
by
it's
the
like,
way,
it's,
when I said it's possible that, his sexual proclivities led him into this, and then, it just became a machine that was about more than that. It's worth remembering that Les Wexner owned Victoria's Secret. And there is a known case where Epstein did what you would expect him to do if he could walk around saying, I work for Les Wexner, who owns Victoria's Secret, which is to get a young, attractive woman to audition, basically, like I think it was in his hotel room. And this led to, I think, the first time ever that he was reported to the police. He basically made it clear that, well, either made it clear this is a casting couch situation, or worse, tried to physically, subdue or assault her. In any event, she called the police, and I think nothing happened as a result of that. But my larger point is, you could say, isn't it a hell of a coincidence that Les Wexner was so pro-Israel and gave him all his money? Well, yeah, but isn't it a hell of a coincidence that the first super rich guy Epstein winds up working for is the guy who owns Victoria's Secret, and we know that Epstein is obsessed with having sex with young, attractive women. And we know he used that position to try to make that happen. So
it's sort of like a dream job for the guy.
You might say that if you're Jeffrey Epstein, this is the gig you want. Yeah.
The rich guy who nobody has paid enough attention to is Leon Black.
Now he's Canadian. He founded the Apollo private equity firm.
He founded this firm. He's the head of the firm. He embodies the firm. The Epstein scandal comes up, and they basically get rid of him. Okay, what did he do? And he claims he was just paying Epstein for tax advice. Did they get rid of him because they were convinced that he got this tax advice and overpaid for it? I don't think so. I think the board looked into it and discovered something else there. Okay. So, but let's find out what that was. There are two problems with this whole theory that I just wanted to raise. There's
which whole theory?
The whole theory that Epstein was running some sort of sex ring for some purpose, i.e. blackmail, or the tacit blackmail, or subtle blackmailers. The Walter Kern theory. Walter Kern's question, he said he worries, why didn't more men go to the house, were repulsed by what went on, and walk out the door, turn around and walk out the door? You'd think some percentage of them would just be too offended morally. And I know two women who he hit on, and they were both completely offended.
Did you personally know two women?
They were overage, and they were immediately repulsed by him, as was
overage in the sense of like 20?
Oh, older than that. But just normal adult women. But they were completely repulsed. So why wouldn't men also get the creeps. Why don't at least some percentage of men get the creeps and leave? And why wouldn't a smaller percentage of men get the creeps, leave, and go immediately to the police? I don't quite know.
I think Epstein, I mean, first of all, the answer with a lot of these men is they wanted to have sex with very young women, and they didn't ask for IDs to make sure they were 18 instead of 17.
Sex with beautiful women.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the difference between 17 and 19 can't be that great.
No, I mean, pedophile is it's used two ways. It's used to mean, a sexual interest in someone who is legally underage. And that by itself does not signify a pathology in the kind of Darwinian sense of being unnatural human behavior because these women are, post-pubescent, fertile. They're the kinds of, so it's not shocking that a heterosexual male would find them sexually attractive, even if, succumbing to that impulse, if you know they're underage, isn't excusable. And then there's pedophilia that almost no man can even understand, which is like, 7-year-old, 9-year-old, 5-year-old, anything prepubescent. And so,
Lolita, 12, which side of the divide does she fall on?
You'd have to send me a picture of her. But look, it's hard to imagine a 12-year-old where I wouldn't go, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think
but,
that's right.
But that where I mean, and I mean like average heterosexual man just goes, no, there's something wrong about this.
It's just, it's weird that Epstein, who made a big deal, I think, of the, they were barely legal. They were barely illegal. They weren't, they weren't 13-year-olds. They were 17-year-olds. And, you're going to make a big deal of that? It's like stealing a bagel, he famously said. And yet he would make such a fetish of having a first edition of Lolita, around. Okay. And Lolita was not 17. Lolita was 12.
And, what was I? Oh, one weird, we don't need to get into the whole Alex Acosta thing, except to say that you and I agree that there's very good reason to believe that, yes, Alex Acosta did say to White House officials when he was being vetted for a cabinet position that the reason he didn't come down harder on Epstein when he was prosecuting the Florida case that led to the first conviction is that he was told by people in federal government, and he was a U.S. attorney, okay, he was in the federal government, that Epstein, quote, belongs to intelligence. But the other weird, and then there's a ton of weird, it's very clear that somebody pulled strings for somehow Epstein managed to get off super light, sentence, and he didn't even have to stay in the prison. What?
Acosta, cut this deal, but A, his office was being assaulted by this all-star team of high-powered lawyers.
Right.
We're hiring detectives to follow his prosecutors around. So he was under assault. And B, the case was not a slam dunk. There were some legal problems with the case as a federal case. So, So a lot of reporters on the case have more sympathy for Acosta than you just said that he was ordered to do it.
He's
the only guy who sent Epstein to jail at all.
But you and I agree that the reports that he said to White House officials, I was told Epstein belongs to intelligence. You and I agree those are very credible, right?
It was, his denial of it was completely incredible, as you pointed
out. That's what I mean. His denial wasn't a denial closely examined. Essential
and then
thing.
There's a third bit of evidence, which is his second bite of the apple, where they said, now Alex, that was a ridiculous denial. Get this right this time, okay? And he was asked by the inspector general or some internal investigator for the Justice Department, but even that is fudge. It's in a report that Michael Tracy makes up the whole bunch about, but it's his second bite of the apple. and, you know, first thought, most accurate thought. And B, it says they asked him, did he have knowledge of Epstein being an intelligence asset, which is subtly different from being told.
Very.
You know, and so if he denies, he said the answer is no. Okay. And they left it at that and they were satisfied with that. Sounds like a setup designed to get a no from him that they could put in their report without delving too deeply.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that maybe this was from Daryl Cooper, but anyway, first of all, let me say, in some sense, power was effectively brought to bear on Epstein's behalf during this prosecution because he got a pretty damn like, and he didn't even have to stay in his prison cell during the day. It was just unbelievable. Every day, he just leaves the prison. 6 days a week.
But Cooper says, first there was a mismatch between the pro-Epstein local prosecutor and Acosta, the federal prosecutor. So Acosta wasn't in charge of the sentencing. The local guys were.
Okay,
And also Epstein had gone to Israel and was threatening not to come back. Saying, fuck you, Israel doesn't have an extradition treaty. I'm going to stay here in this country I don't care about. So, Epstein exerted some influence that maybe Acosta couldn't control.
Yeah. Anyway, the last thing, I think it was Daryl Cooper who said that, like, so that in the end, although there were a bunch of women alleging shit and evidence that a bunch of underage women were involved, including very, very young ones, the deal they settled on specified only one, and she, was only one count, and she was 17. So they chose a 17-year-old. They made it as easy as possible for Epstein to go around saying, because the conviction in the end was having sex with a 17-year-old prostitute. And so it made it easy for Epstein to go around saying, God, she looked 18 to me, and everybody goes, yeah, I know, it could happen to anybody. So there was just so much fishy about what happened in that case, but
I'm not saying they didn't pressure Acosta. I just say they didn't have to pressure Acosta. I believe that what he said during the vetting process was true, even if the story came from Steve Bannon, who was not to be trusted. That's what Tracy said. It's obviously a Bannon story. His denial.
Is a Bannon story? Which thing?
Tracy claims that Bannon told Vicky Ward, who reported it, about the he belongs to intelligence.
And I'm sorry, but the two that opportunity to deny that Acosta had, like the way he handled that, convinces me that he did say it.
I agree that, but that's,
yeah,
you need some convincing after being suspecting it's a Bannon story. That's all. Can't take Bannon stories in the bank.
So speaking of Bannon, I guess we should probably wind this up, but I'm interested in your take on whether, in the end, really much political damage has been done to Trump or will be done. I mean, I have two questions about the difference between elite MAGA and, like, grassroots MAGA, which is, A, do many people beyond elite MAGA really care very deeply about the Epstein case? And B, and maybe these things are related, do many people beyond elite MAGA in the grassroots care that deeply about the Israel issue and whether the U.S. is compromising its interests for the sake of Israel and all that? Because, you know, I think there is some synergy between those two things at the elite level, including in people like Bannon, probably. But is any of this relevant at the grassroots? Is Trump really in much danger?
I think he is more than Harry Anton of CNN, who said it's all over Trump's. He said this today. It's all over. Trump's popularity is as high as ever among Republicans, and in only a point lower in the general electorate. Because his behavior has been peculiarly corrupt seeming in a way that it wasn't before. And we have the negotiations, which Ghislaine it may make it worse rather than better. That's why Ghislaine might not get her deal, that Trump realizes it's not, he doesn't need it, and it just makes it worse. Usually the way you piss off the base is by selling out to the Democrats, okay? So classic that would upset the base is Trump saying, well, we do need a sort of amnesty for farm workers because, you know, the farmers need them. So let's, as he's doing now, let's construct this mini amnesty somehow that gives farmers the illegal immigrants they need. And that pleases the Democrats and pisses off the right. In this case, he's pissed off both the right and the left. You know, the left thinks he is the, you know, he is on the tapes. That's why he's protecting them. And the right thinks he promised them transparency and accountability. And he's protecting either the Mossad or somebody or Melania, or probably not Melania, but either Mossad or himself or some other rich people who were in the sex ring, and they're pissed off. So when you piss off both sides, you lose overall approval points in a way that's selling
but
out.
Wait, but the left doesn't matter. They already hate him. I mean, what does that matter? They hate him as much as you can hate a person.
And it's at the margin, if Trump seemed to be softening on immigration, that would presumably help him get with somebody.
He's doing so much crazy, scary shit. I mean, this is what amazes me about him, is that his fundamental driving impulse, which is to generate a new headline every day with Donald Trump in it, that he's managing to generate these headlines in ways that, more often than not, are genuinely kind of alarming. Like the latest headline, just today's headline, I think, is like, Donald Trump is taking over the D.C. police. Now, I don't know, maybe he has the right to do that, but the point is, it's like a very dramatic thing, not warranted by actual evidence about the crime rate over the last 20 years. And but the larger point
I would dispute that. I think 20 years, the crime rate's clearly gotten worse. That's not as bad.
No, violent crime rate of violent crime in D.C. has not gotten worse over 20 years.
I thought it's been getting better lately, but if you,
I've seen the graph. It's almost a very few years over the last 30 years have been as low as they were last year in 24.
Depends what you include in the graph. Even the Washington Post article today, we had all these statistics.
The point,
ordinary people who were scared, and there's all sorts of shit happening.
The point is, if you think he is anywhere near winning over anybody left of center, any appreciable number of people, I just think you're wrong. He is rightly scaring the shit out of people. He's done so much really destructively norm-busting, if not illegal, stuff. He's a fucking global hurricane. This is the view from the left of center. I know you support Trump. Okay. So you don't share it.
I think he's done a lot of stuff that will be found to be illegal. He's done a bit less of it than I feared. I didn't vote for him.
My God. What did you fear?
You know, at some point the court issues an order and he says, fuck you.
And we're only 6 months into it. We are one eighth of the way through.
You may get there, but we're not there yet. My rubric has held, which is Trump isn't doing anything horrible that the courts aren't going to cure. They're taking their sweet time about it and giving him a long leash to do a bunch of stuff before they clamp down.
Well, they're giving him a very long leash, and I think they will in the end. I mean, I agree. It's encouraging hasn't flat out clearly disobeyed a court order, so far as I know.
The tariffs is the classic thing. I think he'll lose the tariff case. It'll be after a year and a half of his tariffs. So
that'll be so funny. Then what'll the status of all these deals? I guess what'll happen is Congress, if it's still in Republican hands when this thing comes down, they'll say, well, we'll just validate all the existing tariffs that Trump...
But that's pretty tough to do. But that's what he'll try to do. Yeah. Get Congress to...
Now, I think he's scarier than even I. I mean, I knew the second term was going to be worse than the first. And I always thought... the resistance overreacted to a number of things in the first in ways that wound up helping him. But there's, I think there's a lot of stuff to be genuinely fucking worried about. I mean, look, these clowns in the administration, Dan Bongino, come on. This is like a fucking, this is a banana fucking, Mickey, you got to admit, this is a banana republic now. Look at the fucking people he's put in the administration.
The left helped Trump by making a big issue of Epstein, and that got the base's back up. That's why that point was made today. So that was a big mistake on their part. Bongino, I mean, he's not qualified for his job. But he seems like a nice guy, and he's been humiliated.
What's her name? The Attorney General, Cash Patel.
He's not qualified either. Bondi isn't qualified. Okay, none of those.
That's what I'm saying. These are important. Not only are they not qualified, Mickey, they will do Trump's bidding. If he says do this illegal thing, Pam Bondi will say, how soon do you want it done? That's the problem.
Well, they don't seem to be in the business of quitting on principle. That's for sure. Bill Barr, okay. Barr did his bidding, and Barr was a Bush guy. You know, and there was no worse official at the Department of Justice.
Barr did not. Gonzalez. Barr did not consistently do his bidding. He did. Nope. He did some things Trump didn't like, and I think
He made his bones by suppressing Iran-Contra information, and he did it so well that Bush made him Attorney General.
Well, fine.
I mean,
wait, Barr wasn't Attorney Bush's General during. That Bush. Yeah, fine, but I mean, with Trump, Barr did, I believe, look into the allegations of election manipulation and Trump's claim that the election results weren't valid in 2020. And I believe Barr went in and said, here's the report. I have bad news for you. You're wrong. Didn't he?
It was the same impulse as Epstein, which is we got to hush up these scurrilous conspiracy rumors now. So I'm going to put out a report, even though it's not very convincing, to shut it up. And with Epstein, he said, well, people are thinking Epstein was killed. So I better say right away that I've watched this whole videotape and he committed suicide. It's just a general establishment.
Well, yeah, except with the elections, he was right. I mean, there was not good evidence of fraud that would have altered the outcome. There absolutely was not.
I agree. That doesn't mean there wasn't fraud that altered the outcome, but there's no good evidence for it.
Well, that was the question. Trump was claiming there was.
The one other problem with the conspiracy theory is was raised by people is why haven't more girls come forward? And the answer is, I think.
Oh man.
It's humiliating to come forward. Not only is it humiliating, it ain't going to do you any good. And it's also terrifying to come forward because people have been killed. You know, I mean,
plus a number did. I don't know how many, but.
Sorry?
How many women were party to the legal action that kind of revived the thing? Yeah. I mean,
well, in the original case against him, the reason it was slam dunk is because they had, 40 women who were testifying that, that Epstein had sex with underage women. So that's a lot of women.
40 is a lot.
What you don't have is 40 women saying Epstein passed me to big shot third party in order for me to have sex with, Alan Dershowitz.
How many women, now that they're however old they are, want to get in the middle of this shit, man?
Right, that's
that does not surprise
you
me.
You have to
at
make
all.
That argument. You have to make that argument. I think. So, I wanted to bring that up.
So, you've lasted much longer than you claimed you could. I think you've outlasted me. I'm weary.
Yeah, I'm gonna collapse.
And you can escape your WeWorks cubicle. So when are you coming back? When's our next conversation? What?
I may just stay here. I may just stay here and wait for them to turn it into We Live, where you can live and work in the same place.
Is that bigger than Jeffrey Epstein's cell?
No.
Is there a guard? Do you know you're safe? Are you sure you're safe? You know, there are people, Mickey. What?
I've been here at night at 2 a.m. WeWork is pretty scary. Because even though there are cameras, they could, if they killed you, nobody would ever know.
Right. And like Jeffrey Epstein, you know things about people that they'd rather were not divulged too.
Right. But nothing about you. Scared of you.
Okay. Well, let's keep it that way. Okay. So when are you going to come back? When's your next visit to the podcast, Mickey?
So I had one more point.
You're changing the subject, but go ahead.
People who describe Epstein's sexual proclivities, you say, why didn't he just hire a prostitute? Why didn't he hire a 19-year-old prostitute? And the answer is, he liked to make people do things they didn't want to do. That's what got his rocks off, was gaming them and forcing them into doing, having sex when they didn't want to have sex. Okay, or taking off their clothes when they didn't want to take off their clothes. That parallels blackmailing people. Blackmailing is making people do things they don't want to do. And maybe he got off on that too.
No, that's a good point. I think he liked fucking with people's heads. I think if you put those two stories I mentioned together about the two women who were escorted up to Trump, it becomes pretty plausible. Excuse me, that this was indeed a ritual, kind of. And if so, I would imagine Epstein enjoyed it, watching these young women or girls squirm while Trump fondled them. Not in the case of this woman who was his girlfriend and who he's hoping would resist, maybe. But,
or maybe him yelling at her was an axe. We don't know.
Oh, we don't know. Just finally, I listened to some Michael Wolff on him, and Wolff had access to him for a while, I guess, and visited the mansion. And
Wolff has allegedly damning tapes, smoking gun tapes, which are in his safe, which he is trying to sell. He is so devoted to the truth that he is selling these tapes to the highest bidder, and the bids are not high enough yet.
Do you know what the highest bid is or what the tapes reveal?
No, he claims to have been negotiating with the networks for years. They just never.
What do we have a broad idea of what the tapes contain?
He may want to buy a beautiful cottage next door to yours, I think.
I'm happy to sell him my own abode, but back to, do we know what's on, do you know what, broadly speaking, is on these tapes?
No.
So all he says is there's something Epstein-related that's valuable? I mean, I hope he's showing him to the people he wants the money from.
An existential threat to Trump.
Oh, is that what he says?
No, but he gives that hint.
That's kind of if you ask me, that's a slightly dangerous thing to go around suggesting. I don't know what his security detail is like, but
he lives in Martha Stewart like cottage, and which apparently he rents, and I'm sure it has heavy security.
Yeah,
rhododendrons alone.
I had a weird experience with him, but I will not recount it.
I think everybody's had a weird experience with him. It's clear that he was palling around with Epstein in a way that he was on Epstein's side. He admired Epstein.
That's another thing is that in 2014, Epstein, I think it's 2014, contacted him, and he had already, you know, in past years or whatever, had some acquaintance, and he said, do you want to write a book about me? Now, first of all, I mean, if you had Epstein's past, would you want anybody to write a book about you? But it must speak to some level of trust that he thought he had with Wolff, right? I mean,
I hadn't heard that. That's weird. Bizarre. That's bizarre.
Wolff said that.
Yeah. No, that's bizarre. Bannon also has tapes. So everybody has tapes, which suggests to me that the scandal isn't going to disappear, you know, under the water.
Are we talking videotapes, or we just really mean files of some kind?
Bannon went to Epstein and filmed him in some sort of disciplined manner.
Oh, so it's just like, but it wasn't like secret hidden camera tapes. It was like Epstein knew he was on camera.
It's Epstein giving his bullshit to the camera, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I ain't paying for that. And is that what Michael Wolff says? Oh, so Michael Wolff is just his interviews of Epstein?
No, we don't know. Michael Wolff could be hidden cameras of, you know,
I don't know. I don't know what credibility level to assign to Michael Wolff.
I asked Grok. I asked Grok, what are the chances that anything Michael Wolff says is true? And they said 70%. 70%.
That's better than most of us do. Okay. my opinion of him has been revised upward.
Okay. I always shoot for 80 myself, but
I shoot for it. I just never can get there.
Some people have higher standards.
I'm aiming high. I'm just not getting there. Okay. So anyway, you are you didn't answer the question about when you're coming back. I guess you're gonna count the
my future is not clear.
Okay. Okay, but stay tuned, folks. He could show up any minute.
I enjoyed it.
So did I. It was like old times. It was great. We were distinctively illuminating, I think, is the word that reviewers will use to describe this particular production.
So, anyway, right. It's been fun.
Okay,
I'm glad you're on the rebound.
My cancer journey is, we hope, over, yes. And yes. I'm glad that you're, what?
Or have rebounded.
I've rebounded fully. It's like old times. Anyway. Okay.
So see you soon at some point.
See you next time. All right.